Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, Brian Diaz here. Thanks for joining me on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, kicking off your happy hour and hopefully getting your weekend going in the right direction. That's right. And as always, to my radio listeners, the views of this host and this show certainly do not reflect the views of much of what you will find on this station. Got a really good show, fascinating show coming up for you this week. Been excited to bring you this one for a while as we are getting it scheduled. Our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum have a new exhibit opening up in early October called The First Settlement, and it is all about the culinary and cultural history, as well as the present day of the Filipino community here in Southeast Louisiana. And it's one of those stories that a lot of people don't know. It's untold, perhaps, in certain circles a lot of ways. So this is a really necessary and important exhibit that the museum is doing. And it has really, and we'll talk a lot about this during the interview, it has really done a great job as basically forming maybe a center point or a touchstone for much of the Filipino community in the area to connect and convene and assist with the exhibit, as well as just connect with each other. And really to that end, who we're talking to Jessica Melendez Bayuga, who is the president of the Philippine American Women's Association of Louisiana, Chef Christina Quackenbush of Milkfish, and Brent Rosen of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. It's a really, really interesting show. We talk a lot about the exhibit. We talk about the said history that I just mentioned. We talk a lot about food, and especially in our podcast-only segment. So if you are listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com because you can get the whole show there. The podcast-only segment is called Another Shot with Nola Drinks. And what we do there is this time around anyway, is we just focus on talking about food. Yeah, Filipino food, which is delicious if you haven't had it, and there's more opportunities coming for you to experience it and also go to the exhibit. It's going to be great when it opens up in October. A couple other shows we got coming up for you. Next week, we're going to be talking to the guys from Denada Tequila. Looking forward to that. After that, we're going to be talking with our friend Jeffrey Wilson, along with some of his colleagues, talking about young BIPOC individuals in the hospitality industry. It's going to be a really interesting and challenging show, I'm sure. Looking forward to bringing you that one. We're going to be talking about, also again, with our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, talking about their new juke joint exhibit opening up soon. And we'll be talking to the filmmakers behind Roots of Fire, which is all about Cajun music and cultural preservation in that community here in Louisiana as well. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Then we're going to bounce right over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, talking about the First Settlement exhibit and the cultural and culinary history of the Filipino community here in Southeast Louisiana. Come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew.
On October 15th, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum debuts its newest exhibit, Honey Dripper 84, a celebration of juke joints and their culture. The opening event will feature Matthew and Tia Rayford, chefs from Brunswick, Georgia, with a long history of juke joint cooking, and they're excited to bring to you the most authentic juke joint dishes, music, and culture available. We'll see you all on October 15th. From 6 to 10 at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Visit our website, www.southernfood.org, for tickets and more information.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here. Happy to be at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, as you know, and very happy to be bringing you this show. Been really excited to bring this one to you for a while. Excuse me, been talking about it for a good bit. I am joined by my three guests. First up is Jessica Melendez Bayuga, who is the president of the Philippine American Women's Association of Louisiana.
Yes.
How do I shorten that? Can I just call
it? We say powwow.
Powwow. Yes. I like that. I'm going to go with that because I can only remember like three words.
Yeah, so that's it. It is long. I forget it too, but powwow.
Philippine American Women's Association of Louisiana. Yes. Awesome. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks.
Absolutely. And Christina Krakenbusch of Milkfish. How are you, Christina?
Hi, I'm doing very good. Thanks for having
me. Cool. Get right up in there in the mic. Don't be shy. Awesome. Cool. And Brent Rosen, who is never on this show ever, as we were just talking about, president of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
It's good to be back.
It's good to be.
Never on the show, never doing shtick with you. It's really, I don't know why you neglect me so.
Exactly. You know, it's been, what, about maybe 4 or 5, 6 weeks, something like that, since the last time.
It has been a little bit, actually.
So, yeah.
It's good to be back.
Absolutely. It was great. We were just noting you're like the Joan Rivers of
the
show.
Yes, Joan Rivers. So. Yeah. Every now and again, if you're ever sick, let me know.
I miss Joan Rivers.
I'm not going to try to take your job like Jay Leno.
Yeah,
it's Joan Rivers.
Perfect. Well, so we're here, friends, at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, as we've noted, and a really exciting exhibit called The First Settlement that the museum is doing, and it's telling the story. I'll have you all tell the story of what it's really about, but about the Filipino cultural contributions, history, all kinds of great stuff here in the Southeast Louisiana area. I think that's right, Jessica. Is that correct?
Say that one more time.
Just like the Filipino contributions to the culinary scene, history,
yes.
All that stuff here,
yeah.
in this part of the world.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And well, how about if I go, let me do this as I said before. Brent, let me start with you. So just give us a quick, 411 on the exhibit.
Yes, and thank you. This exhibit has been in the making now for it's crazy to say, but almost 2 years. And we were approached during the pandemic by the consulate of the Philippines, or honorary consulate of the Philippines here in New Orleans, about creating some kind of exhibit that would talk about the contributions of the Filipino community here in South Louisiana. And what I didn't know 2 years ago was that the first permanent settlement of Filipinos in the United States was just outside of New Orleans in St. Bernard Parish. And it just so happens that we were opening our library in St. Bernard Parish with about a year lead time before we talked about this exhibit, and we said, why not bring some attention and some artifacts and some of our historical sort of research to bear on this subject and do a little launch of an exhibit on the Filipino culture here in Louisiana in conjunction with the opening of our new library and research center, which is going to be on the campus of Nunez Community College. And it's been now, like I said, about a year and a half or so, and we are 2 weeks away from opening.
Yay.
Which is unbelievable to me. But these projects, they take so long until they're about over, and then they're so fast that it's really the exciting time when everybody's energy is really focused on it, and we're building an exhibit as we speak. And I'm really excited through this exhibit also to have met Jessica and Christina, and I'm thrilled that they are here with us today to talk a little bit, more directly about the Filipino experience here and how we kind of all have come together and formed this fun team to make this exhibit happen.
That's awesome. So and let's continue with that, and then I'm going to set the Wayback Machine for a couple hundred years after. In either one of you, please, Jessica or Christina. So tell us about your involvement with the exhibit. Like, how did you get involved with the exhibit, and what are y'all doing?
So we are so appreciative to SOFAB for bringing attention to the Filipino community. It's actually bringing the entire community together.
There you go.
It's bringing the entire community together, and it's been exciting for all of us. The one thing that we do focus on is Filipino food, because there is no Filipino food that's shared in a community, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Filipino food were shared and cooked by the community for each other, for parties, celebrations, but not necessarily for the New Orleans community or Louisiana community. But we had one Filipino restaurant that opened, and then another one with Chris Pasha, who he worked under Putom, right? And then we have Christina Krakenbusch over here, who I think was a pioneer in introducing Filipino food to all the generations here in Louisiana.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I grew up in the Bay Area in California, so I had Filipino food before, in Manila, by the way, also. But that was the first time, you know, I had actually eaten when you still had the brick and mortar, Christina, there at Milkfish.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. And then, because you're continuing, the restaurant isn't there anymore, but you're doing all kinds of cool stuff.
Yes. So, I mean, when I first moved here, my whole first thing was, I was like, oh, I'm so excited to move here. This is such a big, wonderful world of food. There's every genre that you can think of. Oh, they're going to have Filipino food. I'm so excited. So I Googled Filipino food, and I kept Googling Filipino food. And all I would get is, the little shop, you know, of Chris's, and then sometimes this little place. And then this little place. But there wasn't, an actual, restaurant, full service, bar, tables, all that type of restaurant. And I was like, why? And I was like, why does, why all these other Asian cultures and stuff, we need to be part of that that decision, what are we going to eat tonight, Let's go eat Filipino.
Yeah.
So I was very just driven by it. I was like, I just can't get a break with getting Filipino food. This just sucks. At that point in time, I was running my own catering business. I was also a chef for other restaurants. And during that time, I was just kind of in the background building up what I was going to do until I finally, decided, okay, it's time. We're going to open this Filipino restaurant. And so that having that experience, not being able to have our culture and our Filipino food represented in New Orleans was just like, and then the history that it has here, I was just like, this just can't be, we got to make this better. I moved here to get closer to my culture and everything like that. And mm-hmm. the food and spread the food around. So, that's just, even though I'm not able to feed through the restaurant anymore, I can still, feed them through the pop-ups and I'm just doing all these things to highlight our culture as much as I can with Jessica. We've been just doing so many things since we've come together.
That's fantastic. Go ahead, Jessica.
What I admire about her, so I graduated from LSU, moved back here to be with my husband now, and I heard about Milkfish and I'm like, who is this Panay? serving Filipino food right off of Carrollton. And
no one knew me. I was an unknown Filipino in the area.
Right?
Okay.
But it was, and because you don't hear about Filipino restaurants. I did. I mean, I spent my formative years here, right? Mm-hmm. I was born in Chicago. And so when I moved back and I wanted to meet her because my mother-in-law, they were very heavy into the Filipino community and organizations, right? So, I'm...
In this area,
okay, yeah. Right? So as much as being second generation, I was, forced to assimilate and try to fit in and, stand behind. But when I moved back here and then this Filipino restaurant opened up and I was like, I have to meet this woman. So I ended up stalking her for a little while. And then my mother's, they were... president in for Powell.
Okay.
Right. And so I felt like this obligation with all the work that they've done for us here. They also helped with the markers in Lafitte, right? The Manila village there, and as well for St. Malo. I needed a partner. I needed to find the women to cultivate and be culture bearers of, for the Filipinos here and the younger generations. Okay. And so then that's when I found her.
Awesome. And so, Christina, did the restaurant kind of turn into a cultural center?
It was. The Lions, the Filipino Lions Club had their meetings there every Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was definitely a cultural center. People would schedule their, I had a bunch of Filipino lawyers flying from Chicago and it was 75 in them. I closed the restaurant down for a day for them. It was definitely people were coming, they would come in. They was finally, because it was me. They were where's the Filipino places? We love New Orleans, but we'd love to get some Filipino food.
Right.
And so, when the restaurant was open, I was just servicing all that. And I still kind of am, because they'll email me or contact me. It's where can we set up at? You can feed us. And then I have plenty of chef friends and restaurants.
Yeah, that's
and
everyone.
So it's, I'm kind of still have a restaurant. I just don't have all the headaches of it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, so people look for Milkfish, and they look for her. Mm-hmm. Right. So what's great about her, too, so she was having people offering her to open up other restaurants after Milkfish closed too. But what I love about her and her hustle is that she stayed true to her food and her culture and her flavor, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and I think the community appreciated that. So now she has this crazy amount of followers. So when they do come into town, everyone finds her and mm-hmm. tries to eat her food.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I noticed when I was looking at the Powwow website that, you know, and it's an association and that's, you know, a broader set of circumstances, I suppose. But like food is mentioned big time on the website.
It
like
is
you're talking
now.
About how
yeah.
okay.
It is now. Before it was more like a, like a sorority, kind of like a sorority.
Yeah,
it was a club, like a mm-hmm. social club, uh-huh. right? But if it wasn't for Powwow growing up, I wouldn't have learned, honestly, my culture.
That makes sense. I mean, because you guys were talking about like so many of the social activities
like
are built around
the language,
dancing
right.
and language, but then trading recipes and cooking together and things like that.
Yes.
Also,
so now
it's
okay.
So now, what food is doing is bringing all generations together, and I feel like because of SoFab, because we're doing workshops and sharing our culture to the entire community, that it's breaking generational patterns and bringing everyone together.
The Filipinos
so it's
are coming
exciting.
Out of the woodwork.
Yeah,
that we didn't
exciting.
Even know existed. It's
exciting.
It's really
we have
crazy.
A lot of younger
There's
ones. Yeah, younger ones
that
moving
realize.
Here, wanting to be. You know, saying that they feel like their ancestors are calling them here. And when they do come here, they end up staying because of the people alone or just, you know, Southern hospitality.
Right.
And
one thing I will say that
sure.
Filipinos are the biggest Asian community in the United States as well.
Right.
And a lot of times in other communities, other Filipino community or any other Asian communities, we just kind of like blend in a little bit. You know, we're not really like noisemakers, I guess.
Well, and I think, we're going to take a break, you guys, in about 3 minutes, but we'll continue with the stories. I want to touch on the history. Is some of that with the settlement and what happened is a lot of the settlements kind of disappeared, right? And then so people moved up more to the New Orleans
more
area.
Inland,
and
yeah. More inland. Or they call
inland.
It up front.
Up front. Okay, right. Got it.
Well, I know that, like the Lafitians call it like, oh, where you moving? You're moving up front. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Farther inland.
Farther
is what
inland
we're doing.
To the
yes.
north
yes.
there. So, so a couple minutes before we take our first break, but tell us a little bit about the history because, as I said, we're going to set the Wayback Machine about 200 years. And Brent, you mentioned this that the oldest Filipino settlement in the United States was here in the Lafitte area in Louisiana, but I think it was maybe one of the oldest Asian American period mm-hmm. settlements in the country.
That's
right?
What
right?
The first,
like,
first Asian American yeah. settlement. In
so
the
what
US.
Is that okay. like in the
1700s? 1787.
Say, right.
Yeah.
So the Spanish galleons were riding the Gulf, and they a lot of the Filipinos settled in Lafitte and. In St. Bernard Parish and made a life for themselves.
So this is when Spain had, the Philippines were basically colonies
slaves.
Spain and
right.
enslaved or indentured servants, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
As crew members on,
right.
on the ships, and then many managed to find their way off the ships.
I mean, some people don't like to think of, you know, Filipinos that they jumped ship and, you know, made a life for themselves. I mean,
yeah.
They
That's
did, but it
found their ways off the ships, and as they should. You
yeah,
know?
But they're you know they New Orleans is like the biggest port, right? Or like this
yep.
huge hub, and they just all decided, you know, we can survive here. It's the same climate and as the Philippines, and we can make a life for themselves.
They lived on
right?
the bayous, and
so fishermen,
so
yeah.
fishing and trimping
fishing
and all
trimming.
That. Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
That makes sense, had those skills and brought them over.
Right.
Now, so there were numerous settlements, right, when we go back 200, 250 years?
Manila Village.
Okay, that was the main one,
yeah.
right? Okay.
Yeah.
Weren't
so
there
that's
others,
in Lafitte.
That's the one in Lafitte,
uh-huh.
right?
right.
Okay.
And then there's the St. Malo one.
Which was further down. It's near Shell Beach.
It's like
But it's gone. Which hurricane was it that destroyed it? Was it
Betsy.
Camille or Betsy?
I think it was Betsy.
And so it's been 100 years since there was any real remnant at all of the actual St. Malo community.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the historical marker is give or take about where it would have been
okay.
before. I mean, the coast itself has changed so much. It's just hard to really pinpoint anything.
With a lot
point.
Of the settlements,
because
that's the
of
case,
all
right?
of the fishing yeah. settlements have been destroyed by hurricanes, yeah.
erosion,
everything changing. It's hard to
majority
really pin it down.
Majority of the like is just gone. There's like maybe a stick sticking out of some water over there, but like there's really like it's eroded so much that even you know like we're almost completely gone.
I mean that's like okay. Lafitte too, mm-hmm. but in St. Malo there was a lot of Spanish there, like from the Canary Islands, so they call it Los Islenos.
Okay.
And the Filipinos and the Spaniards, they they made a life with each other, right? And supported one another. The language is pretty similar.
Right.
So in St. Malo, the Filipinos, we still support each other there. So that's why it's exciting that SOFAB's at Nunez will have that the day
yeah,
in
October someplace
1st.
To go.
Yeah, someplace to go. Also connect.
Yeah.
Let's do this, community. Y'all. Let me take a break here on the show, and then we're going to come back. We're going to chat further about the history, talk more about the culinary scene, talk about the exhibit and all kinds of good stuff. Friends, going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
Now, if you really want to roll, get you a big glass of whiskey, a double shot, and a drink of that old Rip Raw gin. Then drop a glass of wine into it. And put a half a glass of rum.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz with you. Thanks for listening to the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, happy to have you here. Happy to be at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And happy to be chatting with my guests, Jessica, Christina, and Brent. We were talking about the new Filipino exhibit connected to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And Brent, we're going to kind of use this as a framework here moving forward, the exhibit. And you mentioned seven components.
Yes,
at the exhibit.
There are seven components of this exhibit. And
okay.
I'm excited because as much as Christina and Jessica have helped with the exhibit, they have not actually sort of gotten the full rundown of what all is going to be in it. So this will be a fun big reveal.
Oh, so we're all going to learn about the exhibit.
Yeah, we're all learning about the exhibit.
We are very excited for the surprise.
So the first kind of two big sections are the history. And so the story of both St. Malo and Manila Village. And then the history of dried shrimp in Louisiana, which is another area we haven't really mentioned.
Yeah.
But the Filipino community was instrumental in sort of creating both the infrastructure and then the actual dried shrimp industry itself. First as shrimp fishermen, and then through the connections with people still in Asia, being able to move the shrimp from here to there once that became possible.
Okay.
So it was a very much a business dominated by the Filipino community. And so we have some really neat artifacts and objects and things related to dried shrimp. And when we say dried shrimp, we mean like 200 square yard platforms made of wood where shrimp would be left out to dry. It would get shaken in the nets so that it wouldn't get stuck and the shells would break and it would just get shrunk and shrunk and shrunk in the sun, just sun-dried shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it was moved indoors. The modern health department did not like the idea of a football field of shrimp just sitting outside in the sun. It's like jerky, exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
seriously, though, there's some old food safety laws we could revisit, but
that's a different
podcast, different thing.
People survive for a long time eating dried shrimp and dried cuttlefish and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, and most of those communities, too, when you think about a settlement, like you think of people really living there, these were more sort of seasonal fishing villages than permanent communities. Now, they were permanent in the sense that it would be there every year when you went back, you know, to fish.
Right.
But most of the women and children were living somewhere more, what did you call it? Is that onshore?
Up front.
Somewhere a little bit further up front than the sort of harsh
farther inland
swamp fishing, fishing sort of, you know, platforms.
Right.
So there's a lot of really neat history in that area. And so we're starting with that. But then, you know, to me, museums really, if we're not telling people stories, it seems like we're doing something that can be done elsewhere. And so, you know, how did we... So we really wanted to get the community involved, which is how we met, you know, Christina and Jessica. But we got to meet all kinds of people. And so one of the exhibit sections is about family recipes and how Filipino cooking has been handed down. Because as both Jessica and Christina will tell you, there's not a lot of recipes written down. It's a lot more of observing and working with family.
Okay.
And learning more by doing than it is from here is a recipe, go cook this.
Okay. So with the two of you then tell us, I mean, some of the specific things that you two individually have done to help put the exhibit together.
I had an amazing interview with Brent for one of the, the displays has a recording of us talking about the specific thing. So, like I said, I haven't been able to see what's happening. I'm just getting like bits and pieces and
little bits here.
Yeah, I'm sending recipes here, and then I'm just like, oh, what is this going to be?
But okay.
What I did was just gave a little history and then a recipe, and very excited to see where it's all going.
What was the recipe, Christina? Or what Which would be one that you would highlight?
Candy Lau.
I did.
I don't remember.
Your Candy Lau's on
there. I know. No, I'm saying that too because I've literally sent out 7 recipes this week to 7 different people.
Yeah. I think the Candy Lau, I'm looking for the table. Okay. Anatomy
we'll,
of the
we'll
table.
Come. We'll come back after the break, or you can look that up. Okay. So that. So you were. So you were exchanging cultural information
we're not
and
on
recipes.
Television, so it doesn't matter that I'm on my phone.
No. But you did just say it.
I blew it.
Yeah. But what Brent and Sofab did for us, we had our very first Filipino food festival here in April, and that opened the doors to families that have been here that have their gardens, and how everyone just kind of reconnected again, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure it was because of the pandemic, but even before then, we all just kind of reconnected. And what SoFab did for us during that time is we all reconnected. Everyone started sharing their food again and their gardens, and we wondered where certain families were that provided like the melaton and the bitter melon. And so a lot of them, I think, Brent contacted too, that are part of the exhibit. So it's really, I mean, it's exciting because all of these people that we've connected with each other are taking part in this exhibit and talking about their history and what they contributed to Louisiana and Filipinos with their food.
So very cool. So yeah. It's contemporary. So you're telling the historical aspects of this, but then there's also a contemporary aspect
of this.
So
there's a little bit of both. Uh-huh. And in that way, we don't sort of leave things. I don't love an exhibit that kind of leaves you sort of like, okay, it's 1960. And the world ends, because so often people just don't really, in our world, you know, it's sort of things are, when they're too recent, it's hard to do history about them. And there's no question about that. Sure. How do you contextualize things that are 5 years old or 10 years old and things, you know, whatever. But for this is much more a story about, you know, how people have learned to cook, where traditions come from, how traditions are preserved. And so what has been very fun is, and we've interviewed a dozen members of the Filipino community for this section on home cooking. And Jessica was very helpful in identifying a lot of the folks. And many of them cook professionally in some way. Or, like Christina, you mentioned the Lions Club.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the men that came on, named Andy Bucalan, he has been sort of the head cook for the fundraisers of the Lions Club for 20 or 30 years.
Okay.
To the point where he's known as the Mr. Onion Mum, because he made 50 pounds of onion mums at the Jefferson Parish Carnival 1 year. And so, you know, we've gotten his story and how he trained, you know, the younger people that worked for him on how to make those onion mums, how his kids learned how to cook. But then we also have some folks who are now professional chefs, like Christina, who some of them are cooking Filipino food. Others of them never cook Filipino food at all. But they learn to cook in that way, and because of that, they have a certain relationship with food and ingredients. And so we've really been able to talk to a lot of people, and in the same way that, you know, we talked to people about that, we also learned about two other things we really wanted to include in the exhibit, which are festivals and gardening. And we included those two things, and I want y'all to talk about the gardening, because you have great garden stories from your families. Jessica, you're looking to be funny.
Why? No, I was just trying to think, because I feel like I've like given you.
I know you've talked too much.
And there's like other people, so I'm trying to narrow it down.
Let me ask one question first, because I think that you touched on something, Brent. You mentioned, and Christine, I'll throw this question to you. So, do we expect that like this exhibit might be a vehicle for younger Filipinos in the community to actually like engage further? And I know we've touched on this, but engage further, maybe rediscover some of the food that they grew up with, or maybe we're not connected to at all.
So this is definitely something I'm trying. So, you know, one thing is I have 5 children of my own. They're all grown children between the ages of 22 and 31. I make sure they all know how to cook Filipino food, so they do. You know, my grandchildren now are eating Filipino food. Ask for it. If they're like, what do you want for dinner? Like chicken adobo or whatever it is. They, you know, they're well-versed as well. So I am definitely doing my part into making sure that happens for them. But also I do feel a lot of younger Filipinos are coming in and wanting to rediscover, because they just always have their aunts and their grand and their titas and their aunties and their, you know, making it for them. So, you know, this way they can actually learn, so they can make it for their own family, just keep it going, mm-hmm. you know. I didn't get to learn that as much as I wanted to. You know, I grew up on a farm, but it was my Irish step-grandmother. And okay. So the only Filipino outlet I had was my mother, and she taught me the food that I had, but it was just very limited ingredients, like no Filipino really ingredients. So a lot of the food that I learned how to make was Americanized depending on what was around.
Right.
So okay. When I differentiated what wasn't and what wasn't like authentic and stuff like that, it just really, like, I really, like, really got into, like, Filipino food history and all the different things that they use.
Okay.
And then just kind of started doing my own thing with them whilst keeping the standard.
Okay. Awesome. That's great. And Jessica, you were going to say, we were talking about...
how did you know?
Yeah, because you look like you have something to say. We're not on television, but
so
I'm looking
crazy
at you.
So the Philippine Islands, right? Mm-hmm. So you can get adobo.
Yep.
But in every different area on the islands, they make it differently, right? And with Christina, if you don't know her history, you know, like, oh, well, adobo shouldn't be tasting like that, or but it's hers. It's what, you know, it's her family recipe. And that's what she shares with everyone. And that's what I hope everyone in the community can continue to share what they, you know, not judge, but just share their take on different Filipino cuisine. Because it's all the same. It's just
family
flavor. Yeah, it's just
like red gravy, right? It's the same argument that we have, like, whose grandma's red gravy is better than whose grandma's red gravy,
exactly.
Right?
Gumbo is
whose gumbo
better.
Whose gumbo is better. Exactly. Exactly.
Why didn't you add dried shrimp in there? Well, because we didn't have dried shrimp.
Hey, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the exhibit First Settlement and more about the Filipino culture here in the Southeast Louisiana area. Friends, come on back. Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the NOLA Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more. Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at PWTSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, we are chatting with Jessica Melendez Bayuga, who is the president of the Philippine American Women's Association of Louisiana. Boom.
Yeah.
And Christina Quackenbush from Milkfish, and Brent Rosen, who is the president of said Southern Food and Beverage Museum. We're talking about the first settlement, the very fine Filipino exhibit opening up in connection with the museum. And Brent, so you're talking about there's like key parts, seven main parts. We touched on a couple before, but we have other ones we want to talk about. So we have gardening and festivals and holidays.
And festivals.
Yeah.
Those were two things that really jumped out in our research and we thought would be neat to cover. Gardening in particular, because, you know, as both Christina and Jessica sort of alluded, even today, you know, where now grocery stores sort of have a little bit of everything, and there's lots of specialty stores and Asian markets, it's tough to find the right ingredients for Filipino food.
Yeah.
So a lot of community was built around gardening and seed saving and seed sharing and the sort of harvesting of things and passing it out amongst the community. And so we definitely wanted to include that. And I know both of you'll have some stories in that area. And then the other thing we wanted to talk about, too, was holidays. You know, this is about, it's an exhibit that is using food as sort of a way of getting into a larger conversation about the Filipino community and culture. But when you think about holidays are oftentimes the sort of greatest hits of the cuisine.
Right.
Where
right.
You may not eat steak and ham and turkey and duck and seafood and all of that at one time, but a couple times a year. And there's certain dishes that really only show up, like your green bean casserole at American Thanksgiving. That's not something I'm eating an awful lot unless it's Thanksgiving, but it's there every time, right there on the thing. And so oftentimes holidays are where culinary traditions, even culinary traditions that may have not been traditions but were regular life, they get preserved as holidays and celebrations and festivals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we wanted to make sure that as we were talking about food, we didn't leave out those exciting things that only happen a few times a year and focused more on the day-to-day food. We wanted to make sure we covered it all. And then in the interviews that we had, what we learned was that was an absolutely great way of getting into these conversations, because everyone we spoke to was thrilled to tell us about their holiday traditions and the dishes that only come out on those rare times as well.
Okay. Cool. And so I want to tell listeners out there, too, that y'all are sticking around for our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks, where we're going to talk food and kind of just focus on that. But Jessica, let me throw this to you, because let's talk about gardening, or either of you, Christina. Let's talk about the gardening aspect and the idea of using that as cultural preservation, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
So growing up, it was the reason why we were introduced, like face plant onto the, why I was introduced to Filipino food is because my dad had one of the most beautiful gardens, and there was a few families that cultivated Filipino vegetables. They would trade seeds, trade vegetables. It was like a co-op, right? And there was a handful of them. And so, you know, as they get old, as we've gotten older, you know, they've gotten older, but it's still a part of us, and they still have gardens now, which I'm hoping with this new generation, the ones that are, you know, into, you know, cultivating vegetables, starting a Filipino co-op. And I know there's one of the chefs and his girlfriend, she does a lot of the gardening, but I hope that it could just, we can continue it with the younger generation. But it's been a huge part.
That's another way for people to connect us through gardening,
right? Oh, for
right?
Sure. And like, absolutely. Even with the vegetable, you know, with the vegetables, you can't find certain things, but we know the people that have it, and we just go in their backyard, or we'll call them up. I'm like, yeah, it's like, who has calamansi, and what color is it? Is it right? So, yeah, it is a huge
awesome.
Part. Yeah.
So, Christina, when you are putting your menus together, that's got to be a bit of a challenge, right, is sourcing ingredients. So are you relying on the community and this network that we're talking about? Or is that more and more, maybe? Or?
Well, it's definitely been a struggle to find all the Filipino ingredients. So having the community garden would definitely make more sense. I would grow it myself. I am a seasoned gardener as well. Grew up on a farm.
You can have, plots. Yeah. Different families can have
exactly.
plots.
Exactly. Because, like, on the farm that I grew up, she literally had every fruit, vegetable, tree, like, whatever. And we never went to the store for any type of produce. I would pick the vegetables with her. We would can or freeze or whatever, make right. jelly sauces. And she had a pantry that our whole family went to. Like, we never went to the grocery store. Everything came from the garden. I would love to get back to that because that's just so much better. I didn't appreciate it then because I was doing all the work with my grandma. But right. I would definitely love to get back to that because it's very important. I'm glad I got to do that.
Oh, and I'm assuming just climate-wise, too, that a lot of the stuff that would be grown in the Philippines, at least through certain stretches of the Philippines, would probably perform pretty
yeah.
well here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and
but
very
Christina
cool.
has her, like, you have your people that you get her Filipino vegetables.
Yeah,
and
I can definitely go
from.
Around
so
and be like, what do you,
when
I
I'm
have
helping
a farmer,
her.
A friend that lives yeah. on the West Bank, and he
like,
grows
where am I
some
supposed
things?
To get that? Yeah. And she'll give me an address, and I'll just go.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so I was like, do
my
I
network
cut
is
it
definitely,
by
yeah,
the leaf?
It's all about
like,
the network, for
yeah,
sure.
It
you
is,
know,
it
we
is.
Just can't, we just kind of stay. And they contact me. If what I'm finding now is that people that have Filipino products or produce and stuff, they'll be like, hey, I got this, you know,
oh,
so which makes it
nice.
Easier. And then I'll just have things and I can be like, oh, well, I'll do this. As
because now you know what you can get and say, I can, this is what I'm going to do. With
right,
it. That's
right,
cool.
Right.
That changes
yeah.
the game, doesn't it?
Farm to table. Well, that would be great. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. So we got about 3 minutes left, y'all, before we close out the radio portion of the show. Can you tell us, Jessica, just a little bit about the association website, and if somebody's listening out there in the Filipino community and don't know about y'all, how do they connect
sure.
with you?
Sure. So Powwow, the website is powwow.org, and we're really just starting off differently now since the pandemic, and we're focusing more on, you know, cultivating the culture. So mm-hmm. putting on workshops, teaching, Christina's been doing demos with different Filipino food. We did a kamayan, which was great here at SoFab. We did a halo-halo, which is like the dessert, the cool dessert. We'll have like pearl making, just different things for the community to learn about the Filipino culture.
Awesome.
Yes.
So powwow.org.
Yes.
PAWAL.org.
Yes.
Awesome.
And then on Instagram, it's powwala. So powwala, was it 2022?
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have links in all awesome. On the show notes too, yeah. So that'll be real easy. And Christina, tell us about how we find you with Milkfish.
I can do Kamayan dinners at your home, but I do.
Say
do Kamayan dinners at people's houses now. Ever since that show,
when we do the podcast segment, we have to talk about what
is. So I do that every Thursday. I do karaoke and Filipino food, which is definitely a cultural thing that I enjoy doing. That's every Thursday at 12 Mile Limit. And I'm also back at the Broadside Theater for other concerts and events. Those are the two places you can find me.
Oh, so you're doing like concession food at the theater?
I'm doing my food at the theater.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. And a 12 Mile Limit also in Mid City, right on.
Instagram is Milkfish Nola.
Awesome. So be on the lookout. And we'll talk about this in the podcast segment, but chef for hire. Hire her to come into your house and make some legit Filipino food.
Yes.
Brent, exhibit, man.
Yes, the exhibit is opening. We're doing a preview with the Filipino community October 1st. The grand opening is October 6th. And then after that, anytime you are in St. Bernard Parish and Nunez Community College's library is open, stop by, check it out. It is actually meant to be visited. Do not feel like it's someone's library and I can't go in there. The whole point is to bring people in and see it. Learn more about the library, learn more about everything we're doing at southernfood.org. Or on our Facebook, which is Eat Drink So Fab, or our Instagram, which is Eat Drink So Fab. And definitely check out Christina's Instagram Friday morning after karaoke, because it is extremely entertaining.
there's aftermath. Aftermath.
You get to see the stories Friday morning from what happens Thursday night.
Oh,
I'm
going
to make this extra special plug for that, because I've seen it and it's magnificent.
Awesome. Cool.
I got a feeling.
So here's what we're going to do, friends. We're going to close out the portion of the radio show here. If you are listening on the radio, I do appreciate it. Go to noladrinks.com. The podcast is there, because we're going to carry on with this conversation, our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. Friends, if you are listening on the radio, again, I do appreciate it. Remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Everybody, up. Thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to bounce right back over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and continue our conversation with Christina, Jessica, and Brent. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks, friends. Thanks for sticking around. We're here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. As you know, we're chatting with Jessica from Powwow, chatting with Christina from Milkfish, and we are chatting with Brent, don't call me Joan Rivers Rosen, from the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Brent, thanks for having us here today, man.
It's been my pleasure. I'm glad we're into the third segment now, or fourth segment.
Fourth segment, yes.
When we can go blue, just like Joan Rivers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is really going by sex.
We're further into our drinks.
Further into our drinks, I know. This has been, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and love being here with both Christina and Jessica, who I've really gotten to enjoy meeting over the last, it's been a minute now, I mean, like 6 months almost.
We've all been talking.
Brent. Yeah, we're friends now.
Notice how he didn't say he enjoyed being with me.
We're not just colleagues, we're friends. Brian and I are colleagues.
Exactly. That's acquaintance.
Acquaintance. We're very collegial.
Yeah, friend goes far. Acquaintance.
Yeah. He's a guy I know from work.
Who I like to hang out with and spend time with.
Who I do like to hang out with.
Yeah, that's important.
Guy. So, I mean, can you really belittle any even more than referring to them as a guy I know from work?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That is the lowest rung. This guy I know from. That's the lowest rung.
Because it means that you had no choice in the matter whatsoever.
That's funny.
So, as promised, we're going to talk a little bit about food, or talk a lot about food, and just kind of focus on that. And I know one of the things I did, you made, Jessica, a very valiant effort today, because we were going to actually have some Filipino rum, Kasama rum, but it's just sold out across the city, I guess.
It is. I think it's a distributor thing.
Yeah, maybe, which is typical. Yeah.
Yeah. So there. Yeah.
Right. It's when you think you get some Filipino weeks. Alcohol in.
Everyone wants Kasama rum.
Yeah.
They're like mixing it up.
October
with, like,
does
lychee.
Begin. The Filipino American Heritage Month. So right, maybe that's what the problem is. Everybody's gotten it ordered.
Oh, that's true.
It could be. Right?
2 weeks away. Yeah, it could be.
So we'll have to reconvene at some point, and because I was very excited to taste the rum. So,
yeah, for sure. Come on in at my house.
Awesome. Okay, awesome. And we're going to talk about that in 1 second, because we also, Christina, talked about how you were like the last bastion of San Miguel beer in the New Orleans area.
Yeah, some people were just so excited that we had San Miguel beer there, because there was so much beer going around in the city, you know. And it was like, that was the one Filipino beer that I had on the menu. I got maybe one Filipino wine, but it was really hard getting it. And then it just disappeared. It's like, sorry, you can't get it anymore.
Oh, that's too bad. We got to bring it back. I think we should start a campaign. Brent, can we get something going in
is
the exhibit?
We do? Yeah, I guess we could do that.
The San Miguel.
Advocacy. Advocacy.
Yeah, I like that. So, yes, exactly. Supply chain advocacy.
Yeah.
Beers of Louisiana. Of every culture.
We're the right kind of nonprofit for that.
I think so. The mentality is clearly here, and there is a bar in the museum.
There is
so,
a bar
I
in
mean,
the museum.
It's pretty legit. So let's talking about food, and you guys were telling me, we love our crawfish boils here in this part of the world, and communal eating, family eating, shared, no forks, fingers, that kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about the Kamayan, and what is that? How does that work? When do we do it? What are we eating? All that good stuff.
Well, I feel like Kamayan dinners are usually a good time when we're getting together. Not necessarily like a holiday, but getting together as a family to just, you know...
a communal meal.
Yeah, just a communal meal to sit down to and stuff like that. It's a very unique experience, too, because you could, you know, there's no utensils. You're using your hands. So you're really getting up and close and personal with your food. You know, you're feeling it, the textures. You're creating the perfect bite in front of you all the time with all the ingredients that they have spread out in front of you. And, you know, the ingredients usually consist of, like, you know, we'll have, like, some appetizers. We'll have, like, three different fried rices, some noodles, some meat dishes. But it will all be spread out to where every bite that you take is a different bite, if you want.
Okay.
You know? And, like, your mouth is just a complete, like, it's just all this stuff in front of you. You're just a lot of people are overwhelmed at first. They don't know how to, you know, like, to go at it. But it's literally pulling your little perfect bite over in front of you and then smashing it into a ball and eating it, you know?
That's awesome.
And as a communal thing, you know, here in this time where everyone's got cell phones, they can't have the cell phones out when they're eating or they'll get them gross.
I like that. It's even
more communal time, you know?
So is it typically done where sort of everything is out at once and all available just from the jump?
Well, so usually, like, we'll have... You know, they can go ahead and start sitting down or whatever like that. And like if I'm serving it and I don't, well, at our workshop that I have with Jessica here at SoFab, the workshop that we did was actually teach the people how to build their own Kamayan. So all the participants had a table, a group of people, and they all created their own Kamayan table on our instruction. It was so much
fun.
Because
it's beautiful so families, when they would have, let's say, Kamayans for dinner, everyone would add in a dish, right?
Okay.
And so they would lay it out, and it was a beautiful table setting. And then everyone sits down and shares the food, but everyone is making certain dishes.
Okay, so like a potluck.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Right. And, then Christina, I mean, her Kamayan, she just does it all.
Fair enough. Right. We should probably leave it to her because she's the expert there. So is it, and you mentioned that it's traditionally presented on a bed of banana leaves across the table.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And one thing we have in Louisiana is lots of banana leaves as well. So
One
thing you want to do with the banana leaves is, so, you know, to keep them nice and shiny and sanitized, we put them over the fire first before we lay them on the table, you know, and then we lay that down, and then we'll start with putting, like, some pickles and vegetables, like, you know, accompaniments, accoutrements and sauces and different things, and then we'll put the rice in there, and then the big boys come in, they just, like, the food just gets piled all up and around on top of the rice, but very pretty to where it's just, like, you know, It's just you eat with your eyes first. It's
so there's an aesthetic, and is there kind of like a somewhat of an organization to like what goes where?
No,
or is it kind of meant to be so everybody can
rice
access
first in the rice middle?
First in the middle, okay.
So rice usually goes in the middle, and when I set up the ingredients, I like to try to make sure that each person like sitting where they're sitting, they're going to have access to everything that the other person sitting across.
Got it. Okay.
So we'll just spread that all down the line, and no one can really eat all courses, so you really have to pick what you want to eat, because most people are like, because
Christine, turn that mic right to you. Yeah, there you go.
Because it's such a big like array of food, you know, you're just like, where do I start, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely an experience.
Well, and it can also start fights as you get towards the end.
Well, that's the boodle fight, right? And so they have the people fighting for the last, you know, chicken thigh or, you know, the last shrimp. So, you know, there's that aspect.
Get a little sharp elbow towards the end.
Little body check as you go in. And what was the term for that, Jessica, you said?
Oh, a boodle fight.
A boodle fight.
Yeah. Boodle
okay.
fight.
Yeah. And what would be maybe highlight like 3-4 dishes that you would find at a Kamayan?
So for mine, I usually do 3 types of fried rices. It'll be like 1 steamed regular rice. I'll do a garlic rice, or I'll do a fermented shrimp fried rice.
Okay.
The crab fat one's
yeah.
good.
And I also do pancit noodles because, you know, that's all your starch. You know, everything else is protein pretty much, except for, you know, the fruit and the pickles and everything. But you'll have like shrimp. Chicken adobo. You'll have lumpia, like shrimp, like a,
always.
You know, peel and eat shrimp.
Yeah.
You'll have chicken skewers, whole fried milkfish on my
right.
tables.
Yeah.
And whoever's bringing what, usually it just kind of gets added in there, but you got to bring enough to spread it through the whole Kamayan.
So everybody gets something. Mm-hmm. Would you tell people what lumpia is? Because I think maybe that would be one dish that some people that are maybe passingly familiar with.
Lumpia, which a lot of people always say lumpia, but it's actually lumpia.
Yeah.
And it is our version of the egg roll, but ours is a very different to me.
Different
I feel
paper.
Everyone always asks me what's the difference between
the
spring
paper.
Roll or egg roll. I was like, it's the paper. I was like, the lumpia wrapper paper itself. Also, you know, the insides as well. You know, people can put whatever you want on the inside. To me, it's that wrapper is just so crispy. You can leave it sit there forever on the table and it'll still be crispy coming back to it later. You know, it's just good. It's just the lumpia wrapper to me. The filling, obviously, but
yeah. What would we typically find in the filling?
So there's 2 varieties.
Okay.
Christina's, both of her varieties are delicious.
I have a lumpia Shanghai, which is the kind that Jessica loves.
Because it's the smaller appetizer size.
They're like cigar size.
Okay. It's like the perfect snack, you know?
And then the regular lumpia with the pork and the cabbage and carrots and, you know, the bigger ones that probably people are more familiar with.
How about milkfish?
How about it?
Yeah, so tell us what is your and tell people how that's prepared and
so
what it is.
With the milkfish and it would you all would be surprised, but I could order a case of thyme of milkfish when I had the restaurant because the Vietnamese fishermen here have it. So I would get it in and I would have to, it was like one of the hardest fish ever to clean. If you are a person that has stuck clean fish, it has so many bones in it, so be careful. You have to be very careful getting all them bones out. One of the most boniest fish. But it gets its name from its texture, its milky texture. It's kind of, to me, it's a little oily, but the texture of the meat looks milky. And when you push on it, it's kind of like milky.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good tasting. A big important part is the milkfish belly, kind of like the pork belly, but it's the milkfish has the actual belly. It's like this little fat layer that's really good if you're a seafood lover.
And is that like you kind of like you pan fry that or something? Or
I stuff it. And then I stuff it with like pork and rice and vegetables, and then I tie it up, and then I deep fry it or bake it or put it on the grill.
Good.
Okay, and the whole thing, you
the whole
put
fish.
It back in with. Okay,
mm-hmm.
got it. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk a little bit because we touched on this during the radio portion of the show. Let's talk about adobo because I'd really love that conversation that you were sharing about how everybody's family's recipe is different, everybody's region. Their recipe is different. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure.
Because we all know like here, Brent, I think you said this, I can't remember if it was on the air or not, you know, whose gumbo's better, whose red gravy is better. I'm just teeing it up so everybody understands the exact fight we're having here.
Mm-hmm. You know, can I say something about the Kamayans though? Because when I have them at my house, like the sustainability aspect of it is amazing. It's you can compost everything afterwards.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's just it's that's what I love about Kamayans too, right? So easy cleanup.
You just wrap up the leaves.
Sustainability.
Yeah.
There's no. Yeah, that's it. Done. They're in the compost. And it's you're picking out your amount of food, so it's not like you're wasting any food.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great.
Yeah. So your question about
just adobo, and like maybe how it would differ from Mexican adobo, and then maybe highlight some regional variations in the Philippines.
Okay. Well, everyone's adobo, based on region, I find now that's just everyone's different,
yep.
Right? So a lot of people have, not judgment, but now it's more when they taste a dish, you want to ask, like, oh, so where are you from? And why do you put, you know, what's your ratio with vinegar to soy sauce? And so now everyone wants to know, where
what's
you're
your
from
adobo?
And what, yeah, what's in your adobo, right? And I think people are more open to it now. With the
like sharing and not
sharing
being as competitive.
Yeah, like,
over
oh, that's not adobo.
Okay.
Oh, okay, well, okay. Now, so they now affiliate it with, oh, that's her adobo, but she was raised in this area, and so now people understand why.
Got it.
Yes, but it's, it, but I think it all, I think adobo,
has a similar flavor.
It does.
All across the board.
It does.
Does not matter who makes it.
Uh-huh.
What are the bridging ingredients in that then?
It's the vinegar for
the
sure.
Vinegar, soy.
Okay.
The vinegar,
that ratio.
So okay. There's some adobos that don't have soy sauce.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
Coconut
vinegar,
milk.
The vinegar and the garlic, I feel like, right. is the main thing that is in all of them. Right? Vinegar
okay.
for
so
sure. That's like the main thing.
That's the base. Okay.
Like, for example, mine is vinegar, soy sauce, black peppercorns, bay leaves, sugar, and coconut milk.
Oh, you put sugar.
Okay.
Okay. See?
See, and thank you for explaining that, because I think, like, a lot of people, when they maybe associate adobo with Mexican food, and then we're talking about using dried peppers, and
completely different.
Though, you know, some
the name is the same. That's
peppers
the only
in adobo, right? Some areas use chili peppers in their adobo, I believe. Right.
Yeah, a lot of people want, if they make it, they're adobo spicy.
Yeah,
you can make your adobo spicy. It's great.
And just introduce peppers as the spicy element.
But there's that flavor that you know it's adobo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is vinegar for
with
sure.
Vinegar is
the main.
Is it what kind?
It could not be adobo without vinegar. It can be adobo without soy sauce. It can be adobo without bay leaves, without black pepper.
Okay.
But it can't be adobo without vinegar.
And all those items are sold here at SOPEP.
Yes, they are.
In the Filipino pantry. Yeah.
Hey, very exciting. Very exciting. What type of vinegar do we use, y'all, typically?
I was going to ask that question, too, because doesn't that vary as well, like what the vinegar is made
from?
Oh,
it's totally different, yeah.
I use straight white distilled vinegar because that is the best. It has the most astringent, like, vinegar flavor that I love as a Filipina because we love vinegar. And to me, I don't like all the other flavored stuff. I do use coconut vinegar sometimes, but white distilled vinegar is the strongest. You know, there's nothing else in it. It's just
straight
vinegar, and that's what I love.
Because there'd be cane vinegars and other things like that available.
Yeah.
Rice vinegar.
I've used cane vinegar. I've never used rice vinegar. I have also used apple cider vinegar, and I did not like it.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I can see it's kind of mild. It's particular in where in how it is.
You know, I've tried to use different vinegars, and I keep coming back to the white.
Well, I would imagine the apple cider, like, it. You use it for barbecue, so it takes to pork, but it probably just tastes wrong for adobo.
It really
like
does.
It makes it feel
I don't
too.
Know. I don't well, know it, what it like, is.
Well, there's a sweetness
it
to
not,
it that's very particular.
Like in a way that you would have sweetened American barbecue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the adobo conversation reminds me a little of that, like the regional differences in American barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, the way the Texans and people from South Carolina,
Kansas,
people from Kansas, Tennessee,
different
everybody sort of has,
and,
you know, their sauces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oh, we do whole hog and we do it this way.
Right, right.
Oh, well, we only do this piece and that way. And it's very, it's fun because I think that's how you know you really do have, like, a cuisine, is that people are informed enough about it to argue about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And have conversations about it and, you know, have debates over the right kind of vinegar for it.
Yeah.
That actually takes a pretty well-developed cuisine for those conversations to even be sort of the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's really very neat.
Well,
yeah.
And let me, because we got to actually close this out, but I think it kind of brings it full circle to what we're talking about, because I think perhaps maybe the exhibit is a good place to talk about these things, right? Because you're going to have some of the information there. And then as far as people visiting and the events happening around the exhibit, exchanging information, then we can have these conversations about adobo or
and
vinegar.
And we do actually have a section about Filipino products and the vinegars.
Oh, yeah, nice.
We actually do have three different types of vinegar and then what they would be used for traditionally. And so we do get into this.
Vinegar.
And Filipinos love vinegar and also salts. because salts have different interesting regional variations well from island to island amongst the Philippines. And so, you know, you would use a finishing salt versus a this kind of salt versus that kind of salt, depending on where you are, too. And so I think, you know, that real the regional differences are fascinating because they're everywhere. And we are so ready when we look at cuisines Americans aren't familiar with to sort of sand off those regional differences and just say, this is Mexican food, this is African food, this is Chinese food.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it is really neat to be able to see how there's the big umbrella of Filipino food, but really it's different communities, different regions, different cities.
And thank you for saying that, because I think
we've... Yeah, thank you so much, Brent, for letting us be able to just do this, too, here. That's so great.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll have you guys tell everybody how to connect with you again, but I think that's a really important thing. It's a very diverse country. It's a gazillion, which is not a number, islands.
Yes.
In 7,000.
7,000.
That we know of right now.
Yeah, I think it is. Is that the largest archipelago in the world, or is Indonesia?
I think Indonesia is bigger.
And then the Philippines is second, I think.
Too.
So incredibly diverse. And so I think that's an important thing to highlight here, is that there's not just sort of one size catch all, one size fits all when it comes to Filipino cuisine.
I'm fired.
And you'll be able to. Yes, that was, you're getting the call.
Sorry,
you're fired.
Sorry.
No more Joan Rivers for you.
Yeah, and knock the microphone over and then the phone immediately.
Oops. Well, Brent, do me a favor. Tell people where they can find the exhibit and also just SOFAB in general.
Yes, SOFAB in general. Eat, drink, SOFAB on social media, southernfood.org. as our website, and then Nunez Community College is our partner for our new library and research center. We are opening with the Filipino exhibit that we've been talking about, but at any time, we still have our 35,000 books on all topics, menu archives, different things there. So if you're interested in the Filipino community, come. If you're interested in food and beverage in general, come and stay longer and see what we've got over there.
October 6th, you
October said? 6th, it will be open to the public after that day, and we should have it on display for at least a year.
Awesome.
So plenty of time to come and check it out and see things over in St. Bernard.
Very
Yay.
Cool. Awesome.
Thank you.
And Christina, will you tell us how to connect with you and Milkfish?
Yes. Social media, Milkfish NOLA. Website is milkfishnola.com. And then Thursdays at 12 Mile Limit, this fall at the Broadside and in your home if you like.
Perfect. I highly recommend that. That sounds fantastic. And Jessica Powell, please.
Philippine American Women's Association of Louisiana, Facebook, and Pawala 2020 on Instagram. But you can go on the website to look for our workshops, Filipino workshops, on powwow.org.
Cool. What are some of the workshops y'all do?
So we just did the Kamayan one here at SOFAB. We did a Halo Halo one. Festivals are starting to come up, so we'll do probably like parole making and probably more food demos.
Parole making Filipino Christmas ornaments, very elaborate wooden pieces.
If you see one in front of someone's house, then you know they're Filipino.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we actually did get to the holidays and festivals even a little further as part of the exhibit.
We did it.
Thank you all three of you so much.
Thank
it's
you
been
so
a pleasure.
Much for having
Absolutely.
Us.
Friends, brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining me on the NOLA Drink Show this time around. Friends, happy to have had you here. Yeah, you know that. Great show. Thanks to Jessica, Christina, and Brent for a wonderful conversation. Very informative. Really, really interesting. I do want to encourage you to go check out the exhibit. I'll get to more of that in just a second. I want to point out next week's show, we're going to be chatting with the guys from Denada Tequila. It's a new tequila brand started by couple guys that graduated Tulane University right here in New Orleans, and they've partnered with a family who has been making tequila for generations down in Mexico. We're going to talk about their brand, their support for environmental causes, cultural sensitivity, and some other things along those lines, and also sip on some fantastic juice. They make a really nice Blanco and a really nice Reposado. I've had a bit of both so far, and it's research, friends. That's what I do. I'm a professional. It's called research, getting prepared for the show, but we'll talk about the juice that they make as well. But getting back to the exhibit, so we mentioned during the interview that the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, which is, of course, located in Central City, that neighborhood here in New Orleans, but they started their
new research library. So it's the SOFAB Research Center and the Boyd Hospitality and Culinary Library there at Nunez Community College, which is in St. Bernard Parish. And you can go to southernfood.org and you'll see more information about it. But the Research Center is opening on October 6th, which coincides with the kickoff of the Filipino exhibit, which, as you know, is called The First Settlement, Filipinos in Louisiana. And that morning, people are invited to come. It starts, I believe, at 9:30 or so on October 6th for about an hour, hour and a half. And there's going to be a little ceremony christening the new research center as well as the new exhibit. So that should be really cool and a lot of fun. Just wanted to let you know that that is one to go check it out, because what they've done, I'll tell you. So they have their holdings, and the Southern Food and Beverage Museum has a great set of research materials, all kinds of old books, menus, curio from the culinary world, and they're just bursting at the seams in their spot in Central City. They actually had a satellite building down the street where they used to keep their stuff, and it just wasn't very accessible to people to use. And so they've partnered with Nunez Community College to be able to put out more, much more of their collection and make it accessible for researchers, students, and those who are just curious that want to learn more about the culinary history and connected issues here in Southeast Louisiana and beyond, really. And so it's going to be a really neat relationship that they have and a really neat research center. So I'm really happy for them that they've done this, and I would encourage you to check it out. And again, just wanted to flag to your attention that the Filipino exhibit that we discussed on today's show is not at the main campus, the main museum for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. It is at the Boyd Library, and they're at Nunez College, which is the SOFAB Research Center and Boyd Library, as I said. So go check that out. Everything you need to know can be found at southernfood.org, friends. That's all I got this week for you. Here's to you.